Chapter 7. This is it, boys. Oahu was still ringing from the Japanese attack. The enemy had left so many holes in the roads that the authorities hadn't been able to fill them all yet, leaving the local drivers swerving around craters. There were still a few gouges in the roof of the Hickam Field barracks, making for soggy airmen when it rained. The island was on constant alert for air raids or invasion, and was so heavily camouflaged, a ground crewman wrote in his diary, that one sees only about one-third of what is actually there. Each night, the island disappeared. Every window was fitted with light-proof curtains, every car with covered headlights, and blackout patrols enforced rules so strict that a man wasn't even permitted to strike a match. Servicemen were under orders to carry gas masks in hip holsters at all times. To reach their beloved waves, local surfers had to worm their way under the barbed wire that ran the length of Waikiki Beach. The 372nd Squadron was sent to Kahuku, a beachside base at the foot of a blade of mountains on the north shore. Louis and Phil, who would soon be promoted to first lieutenant, were assigned to a barracks with Mitchell, Mosnet, 12 other young officers, and hordes of mosquitoes. "You kill one," Phil wrote, "and 10 more come to the funeral." Outside, the building was picturesque. Inside, Phil wrote, it looked like a dozen dirty Missouri pigs had been wallowing on it. The nonstop revelry didn't help matters. After one 4 a.m. knockdown, drag-out water fight involving all 16 officers, Phil woke up with floor burns on his elbows and knees. On another night, as Louis and Phil wrestled over a beer, they crashed into the flimsy partition separating their room from the next. The partition keeled over, and Phil and Louis kept staggering forward, toppling two more partitions before they stopped. When Colonel William Matheny, the 307th Bomb Group commander, saw the wreckage, he grumbled something about how Zamperini must have been involved. There was one perk to life in the barracks. The bathroom was plastered in girly pinups, a Sistine Chapel of pornography. Phil gaped at it, marveling at the distillation of frustrated flyboy libido that had inspired it. Here in the pornographic palace, he was a long way from his minister father's house in Indiana. Everyone was eager to take a crack at the enemy, but there was no combat to be had. In its place were endless lectures, endless training, and when Mosnet was transferred to another crew, the breaking in of a series of temporary co-pilots. Eventually, Long Beach, California native Charlton Hugh Cuppernell joined the crew as Mosnet's replacement. A smart, jovial ex-football player and pre-law student, built like a side of beef, Cuppernell got along with everyone, dispensing wisecracks through teeth clenched around a gnawed-up cigar. When they first went up over Hawaii, the men were surprised to learn that their Arctic gear hadn't been issued in error. At 10,000 feet, even in the tropics, it could be sharply cold, and occasionally the bombardier's greenhouse windows froze. Only the flight deck up front was heated, so the men in the rear tramped around in fleece jackets, fur-lined boots, and sometimes electrically heated suits. The ground crewmen used the bombers as flying ice boxes, hiding soda bottles in them and retrieving them ice cold after missions.